Orville Freestone Jr., Sunday School, January 23rd, 2011.
Let us return to the book of Isaiah this morning and turn to the 13th chapter. In reviewing Isaiah, you remember the first six chapters were the book of Judah and Jerusalem, God's indictment of Judah for their apostasy and sinfulness. And the second book was chapters 7 through 12, the book of Emmanuel, the virgin-born child, the son given, and who would be wonderful counselor, mighty God, everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. We come to a different sort of section now, chapters 13 through 23, the book of burdens. How many of you are using the King James Version this morning? How many of you are using one of the more contemporary versions? Okay, you will notice a difference in the reading of some of this. The first is, the first verse of the 13th chapter in the King James, the burden of Babylon, which Isaiah, the son of Amos, saw. In the more contemporary versions, it's the oracle concerning Babylon, which Isaiah, the son of Amos, saw. An oracle is a Latin word meaning an oral proclamation. And the Hebrew word here, oddly, means both a burden or an oral proclamation. The root meaning of the word was to lift up, like you lift up a burden to carry it. Or, as with the prophets, they lifted up their voice and cried out their message. So, basically, both meanings are included in that Hebrew word. The burden of Babylon is the first of the 12 burdens in this book of burdens, chapters 13 through 23. So in chapter 13, 1, we have the burden of Babylon. And in chapter 14, verse 1, we have the burden of the Assyrians. And in chapter 14:29, the burden of Philistia, or of the Philistines. In chapter 15:1, the burden of Moab. And in chapter 17:1, the burden of Damascus. And in chapter 18:1, the burden of Ethiopia in the King James, or the burden of Cush in the more contemporary versions. And then in chapter 19 and 1, we have the burden of Egypt. And in the 21st, we have the burden of the desert of the sea, which is would be today Iran. And in the 21st chapter, in the 11th verse, we have the burden of Duma, which also is Edom. And in the 13th verse, the burden of Arabia. And in the 22nd chapter, the first verse, the valley of vision, burden of the valley of vision, which is Israel, and in the 23rd chapter, in verse 1, it's the burden of Tyre, which is now all of these were the nations surrounding Judah in that day. And let's take a look at these again. If you have a map in your Bible, you might turn to it, to the time of the kingdom of Judah and Israel. But the burden of Babylon. Babylon was the kingdom in southern, what is today southern Iraq. Then, concerning Assyria, that was a kingdom in what is today northern Iraq, up near where the Kurds are. And then the burden of Philistia, or the Philistines, is today the Gaza Strip that has caused so much sorrow and pain and warfare. Then the burden of Moab in the 15th chapter was a kingdom in southern Jordan. And Damascus is the capital of Syria. And Ethiopia, or Cush, was in Sudan, south of Egypt. And then the burden of Egypt and the burden of the desert of the sea was in the area of Elam, one of the tribes of Iran, or Persia. And then Duma was Edom was also a kingdom in southern Jordan. And then Arabia, the same as Arabia today. And then the burden of Tyre is today Lebanon. So you see all the peoples that were surrounding Judah in that day, we see are surrounding the peoples surrounding Israel today. And the names of some of them are different. Some of them, like in Jordan, two or three of these kingdoms make up what is today Jordan. But it is the same peoples, same Semitic peoples for the most part, surrounding Israel and threatening it today. Do you think that is not one of the signs of the times that we see approaching, when the prophecies of the end time will be fulfilled, perhaps in our day? The same peoples surrounding Israel today that were surrounding Judah in that day. But let us read this 13th chapter through before making further comments on it, and keep in mind that this is all in poetry. The prophet has recorded his prophecies in what Hebrew scholars call the most elevated kind of Hebrew poetry. On a bare hill, raise a signal. Cry aloud to them. Wave the hand for them to enter the gates of the nobles. I myself have commanded my consecrated ones. King James says, how does it read, Mike, in the King James? My sanctified ones. We'll discuss that when we come to it. I myself have commanded my consecrated ones and have summoned the mighty men to execute my anger, my proudly exulting ones. The sound of a tumult is on the mountain, as a great multitude, the sound of an uproar of a kingdom's. of nations gathering together. The Lord of hosts is mustering a host for battle. They come from a distant land, from the end of the heavens, the Lord and the weapons of his indignation to destroy the whole land. Wail, for the day of the Lord is near. As destruction from the Almighty it will come. Therefore all hands will be feeble. Every human heart will melt. They will be dismayed. Pangs of agony will seize them. They will be in anguish like a woman in labor. They will look aghast at one another. Their faces will be aflame. Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel with wrath and fierce anger, to make the land a desolation and to destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of the heaven with their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be dark at its rising, and the moon will not shed its light. I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will put an end to the pomp and arrogant and lay low the pompous pride of the ruthless. I will make the people more rare than fine gold and mankind than the gold of Ophir. Therefore, I will make the heavens tremble and the earth will be shaken out of its place at the wrath of the Lord of hosts in the day of his fierce anger. And like a hunted gazelle, or like sheep with none to gather them together, each will turn to his own people, each will flee to his own land. Whoever is found will be thrust through, and whoever is caught will fall by the sword. Their infants will be dashed in pieces before their eyes. Their houses will be plundered, and their wives ravished. Behold, I am stirring up the Medes against them, who have no regard for silver and do not delight in gold. Their bows will slaughter the young men. They will have no mercy on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes will not pity children. And Babylon, the glory of the kingdoms, the splendor and pomp of the Chaldeans will be like Sodom and Gomorrah when God overthrew them. It will never be inhabited nor lived in for all generations. No Arab will pitch his tent there. No shepherds will make their flocks lie down there. But wild animals will lie down there, and their houses will be full of howling creatures, where ostriches will dwell, and the wild goats will dance. Hyenas will cry in its towers, and jackals in its pleasant places, palaces. Its time is close at hand. Its days will not be prolonged. You notice some of the names of those animals are different in the King James, and that's because the Hebrew words are rather uncertain, and some of them could apply to more than one kind of animal. If someone in colonial America had described in great detail 9/11 and our reaction to it, would you be impressed? That's what happened here. In Isaiah's day, Babylon, which was a very ancient city and occupied perhaps longer than any other city that we know anything about. Some scholars think it may even go back to 4,000 B.C. Their writings go back past 3,000 B.C. And it lasted all those centuries, but not all by the same people. Many different peoples from the ancient, the first founders, through many different invasions and different empires and so forth, up until the time of Isaiah. In his day, Babylon was a small town. It had lost all of its ancient splendor, and it was a vassal of Assyria to the north. And it was inconsequential in matters of politics and power politics and diplomacy in the Middle East. But 200 years later, Babylon, about the time of Isaiah's time, a new people, the Arameans, conquered the land of the two rivers, and they became in possession of Babylon, but it was still an insignificant city. 200 years later, they became a great world empire of that day. They destroyed Jerusalem and Judea. They took the Jews captive to Babylon. Jeremiah said that they would stay there for 70 years. And after 70 years, they would be liberated. Isaiah here looks forward to about 250 years and describes the destruction of Babylon and the release of the Jews and other peoples from their slavery in Babylon. If you want to read about that time, read the book of Daniel. Daniel was one of those Jews taken captive by the Babylonians. He lived through those 70 years. He had a long life. He was a youth when he was taken captive. He lived through those 70 years and on into the time of the Persians. And you remember the story of the destruction of Babylon, how King Nebuchadnezzar and his grandson, Belshazzar, threw a great feast and called all of his nobles to the feast, and they drank wine out of the sacred vessels they had taken from the temple in Jerusalem. And then there came forth a hand and wrote on the wall, "Mene, Mene, Tekel, Upharsin." Remember that? Remember how the king of Babylon was, well, he became unhinged, as we would say. This is the description of that time. This chapter is the prophetic description of what Daniel recorded in King Nebuchadnezzar's day. And not Nebuchadnezzar, but Belshazzar. And all of this is in poetry. So try to think in poetic terms when you're reading these things. And their poetic descriptions. "On a bare hill, raise a signal. Cry aloud to them. Wave the hand for them to enter the gates of the nobles." This is a call to arms, as we would say today. And on that day, in order to muster all the troops together, they would set their headquarters on the top of a bare hill or a bare mountain, and they would build a signal fire for all the peoples to see, something like Lookout Mountain here. And this was a call for all of the troops to assemble. Now, these were the armies of the Medes and the Persians. In Isaiah's day, the Persians lived way far off in the mountains close to India. The Medes were the descendants, the Kurds today are the descendants of the Medes. They lived in the mountains to the north. And the Elamites lived at the head of the Reds of the Persian Gulf, with all of these nations of what became Persia, the Parsis, the Elamites, the Medes, and different ones, were gathered together in a confederation to destroy Babylon. So on a bare hill, raise a signal. They build their signal fire up there to be seen afar off. Cry aloud to them, wave the hand for them to enter, that is, give the signal for them to enter the gates of the nobles, that is, the gates of Babylon. If you have a Bible encyclopedia or a Bible handbook at home, you can probably see pictures of these gates of Babylon. They were built in honor of the sun god and the moon god, Marduk and Ishtar, and their various idols. But these gates were, archaeologists are unearthing them today. In fact, Saddam Hussein thought to make a vast outdoor museum of Babylon, but he didn't quite finish his job. And these gates were about 30 feet high. They were towers, twin towers between which was the gate. Huge gates, the gates of the nobles through which the king of Babylon and his nobles would march in conquest and march the slaves from Israel and Judah into the slavery there. Wave the hand for them, that is, the Medes and the Persians, the enemies, to enter the gates of the nobles. Herodotus, one of the ancient Greek historians, tells us that Babylon was surrounded by a moat filled with water from the Euphrates. And then their wall was built inside of that moat. So what did the Persians do? The wall was impregnable. The moat couldn't be crossed. But the river could be diverted. So they diverted the course of the river and walked through underneath the walls in the riverbed to conquer Babylon. Enter the gates of the nobles. And this, the prophet here is speaking the words of God. I myself have commanded my consecrated ones, or my sanctified ones. Here again, remember, in Hebrew, sanctified means set apart, or consecrated, or devoted. So it doesn't necessarily carry the moral value that it does in the New Testament. These heathen armies were God's chosen ones to destroy Babylon. I myself have commanded my consecrated ones and have summoned my mighty men to execute my anger, my proudly exulting ones. So God here claims that he summoned all of these armies of the Medes, the Persians, the Elamites, and all of the other tribes of the far east, so far as Israel is concerned. This is another way of saying, like the book of Daniel said, God sets up rulers, God deposes rulers, and he himself directs all unseen the affairs of mankind. Do you think it's any different today? Joseph Hoffman Cohn's father was a Jewish rabbi in the mountains of Carpathia in what was then Hungary. In reading his Hebrew Bible, he came to faith in Christ. And he immigrated to New York City and founded the American Board of Missions to the Jews. This was in the early 20th century. His son, Joseph Cohen, took charge of the mission after his father's death, and he wrote an article after World War II. He said, God's hand is in all of these events of the latter days. He said, World War I and World War II, among other reasons, was God's way of driving the Jews out of Europe and back to the Holy Land. He said, otherwise they never would have left Europe. And he gave us an example. How many American Jews do you know who are anxious to move to Israel, where life is hard, where taxes are high, where everyone is a member of the army? True, those who are there have no place else to go. True, they are very patriotic and they are very zealous. But how many American Jews are anxious to emigrate there? There are more Jews living in New York City than there are in the state of Israel. God's hand is behind all of the events on this earth. And the book of Revelation, one of its lessons is, we who believe have no reason to fear. We have only a bright hope that should delight our hearts to know that our Lord is in charge and he will return. So this describes what became the day of the Lord for Babylon. Now he's describing the battle here. The sound of a tumult on the mountains, as of a great multitude. The sound of an uproar of kingdoms. They had a coalition in Babylon. We recently, and still I guess, have a coalition in Iraq. Babylon, the ruins of Babylon, is only about 50 miles south of Baghdad. The sound of an uproar of kingdoms, of nations gathering together for shock and awe. The Lord of hosts, with apologies to Cheney, the Lord of hosts is mustering a host for battle. They come from a distant land, from the end of heavens, that is from the land of the horizon. The Lord and the weapons of his indignation to destroy the whole land. Wail, for the day of the Lord is near. As destruction from the Almighty, it will come. Therefore, all hands will be feeble. Now, picture in your mind Belshazzar's feast as we read these words. Therefore, all hands will be feeble. Remember how Belshazzar reacted to the writing on the wall? Every human heart will melt. They will be dismayed. Pangs and agony will seize them. They will be in anguish like a woman in labor. They will look aghast at one another. Their faces will flame. What does it mean, Daniel, that writing on the wall? Behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel, with wrath and fierce anger, to make the land a desolation and to destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of the heavens and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be dark at its rising and the moon will not shed its light. Now, it's very possible, I don't know whether it is or not, that there were eclipses of the sun and the moon, but this is poetic statements here, and it is a descriptive poetic term. For the stars of heaven and their constellations and the sun and the moon were the business of the astrologers of Babylon to tell portents and to give predictions and to give counsel to the king. The stars and the heavens and their constellations were darkened. There was no message. There never is any message in astrology anyway, but from the standpoint of the Babylonians, there was no hope in their astrology. It will not give them any light in what to do or how to go about anything. The sun will be dark at his rising. That is, it will be meaningless to them. And the moon will not shed its light. It shed no light on the situation, no way out for them. I, God says, will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. You think the wars and tumults of the world are just the result of sinful man? Here we see that God uses sinful man and the wars to destroy people when they become too wicked. This happened to Rome when the barbarians from the north overran Rome. The ruined city of Pompeii is a museum to the depths of human depravity in Italy. And I have a book written by an Israeli archaeologist, Palestine Before the Hebrews, describing the Canaanite culture and their life and their history. And what he describes is the depths of human degradation was Canaanite culture and their everyday life. And at the end of the book, he says, and then the Hebrews came. God used the Hebrews to destroy the wickedness of the Canaanites. And God told Abraham 400 years before, the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. When it became full, he brought the Hebrews into Canaan to destroy its wickedness. Doesn't give you very much confidence for the future of our country, does it, the way it seems to be going? I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will put an end to the pomp of the arrogant and lay low the pompous pride of the ruthless. I will make the people more rare than fine gold and mankind than the gold of Ophir. God has his way of reducing populations, especially wicked populations. Therefore, I will make the heavens tremble, and the earth will be shaken out of its place. It's politically incorrect to say so, but you know, plagues like the Black Plague of Europe in the Middle Ages destroyed 30% of the population of Europe. And AIDS is taking a role, its toll in the world today. God has his way of working his wrath. Therefore, I will make the heaven to tremble, and the earth will be shaken out of its place at the wrath of the Lord of hosts in the day of his fierce anger. And then he describes the people, Belshazzar and his like a hunted gazelle, or like a sheep, or like sheep with none to gather them. A hunted gazelle showing terror in its eyes. Each will turn to his own people. That is, Babylon was a very metropolitan place. It was a place of commerce. There were many foreigners there. They will see what's coming. They'll get out of the way and go home. and each will flee to his own land. Whoever is found will be thrust through, and whoever is caught will fall by the sword. The same thing they did to the Jews when they destroyed Jerusalem was done to the Babylonians when Babylonia was destroyed. Their infants will be dashed in pieces before their eyes. You remember the 137th Psalm, that plaintive psalm of the captives? Happy shall he be who shall dash thy infants against the stone, as the Babylonians did to the Jews when they destroyed Jerusalem. And this did happen when the Medes and the Persians conquered them. Their infants will be dashed in pieces before their eyes. Their houses will be plundered, their wives ravished. Behold, I am stirring up the Medes against them. Today, the Kurds, who have no regard for silver and do not delight in gold, that is, they cannot be bought off. Their bows will slaughter the young men. The bows of the Medes were a great improvement in the tools of war in that day. They were very accurate and strong. And their archers were a formidable foe. Their bows will slaughter the young men. They will have no mercy on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes will not pity children. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the splendor and pomp of the Chaldeans, will be like Sodom and Gomorrah when God overthrew them. It will never be inhabited or lived in for generations. No Arab will pitch his tent there. No shepherds will make their flocks lie down there. But wild animals will dwell there. Their houses will be full of howling creatures. Their ostriches will dwell, and wild goats will dance. Hyenas will cry in their towers, jackals in their pleasant palaces. Its time is close at hand, and its day will not be prolonged. Now, Babylon was not destroyed to this extent right away. It continued as an administrative center under the Persians. It continued for a number of centuries, but the end did come. And for centuries, it was not even known where the ruins of Babylon was, until in the 19th century, archaeologists began to hunt and search and dig. And they said that it is true, no Arab will pitch his tent anywhere near what he thinks is the ruins of Babylon. And they will not pasture their flocks there. They are superstitious about that place. So eventually, all of this became literally fulfilled. For the heavens do rule in the affairs of men.